Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. As many of you know, I first launched this podcast to be a resource for men in their personal development, using myth and archetypes and the hero's journey to assist men wherever they found themselves in life. And my aim has always been to help humanity in whatever way that God is asking of me. And I've been completely upfront in my interest in esoteric topics such as the plandemic and the narrative war with the entrenched globalists, to 9/11 truth, to vaccine misinformation, even to extraterrestrials and the truth and psyops around that. Nothing has been off the table, but I've never wanted to be known only for quote-unquote conspiracy theories. I've always and will always do my best to offer something valuable to my listeners in the way of fresh perspectives, new resources, and new tools for your hero's journey. And this is true for both the male and the female listeners. Today, I have the pleasure of dialoguing with a fellow traveler in the Truthers movement, and it's interesting to me how he and I have arrived at a similar place. With all the Epstein files and corruption and graft of the entrenched systems in freefall collapse, both my guest and I are moving on to new territory, as you will hear in our conversation. The news that is hitting the shores of consensus consciousness are things we've been talking about for years. It's old news, and I, for one, am looking for fresh inspiration, creativity, and new perspectives on how do we build the new systems free of centralized control? How will you and I and future generations thrive? And how do I continue to elevate my own vibration so I can receive this information? Are you following me? Where am I stuck in an old fight? If all this Epstein stuff is for a different part of the human tribe, then I am free to wander further along the path and have conversations like the one today. I don't know how it is for you, Base Camper, but I find it all inspiring. And who couldn't use a spark of inspiration right about now? Before we pull up chairs to the campfire, I found three quotes that I thought were relevant. The first is from the great Joseph Campbell, who said, quote, "The only possibility for our time is the free association of men and women of like spirit, not a handful, but 1,000 heroes, 10,000 heroes, who will create a future image of what humankind will be," unquote. The second is by Uncolini on Instagram, who says, quote, "Don't panic, but the world is run by a 3,300-year-old inbred cult of Satan-worshipping pedophiles who are using blackmail and imaginary money to stay in power," unquote. Oh, man, I love it. And the last one is by Esoteric Exposal, who says, quote, "A conspiracy theorist is one who refuses to accept the official version on the word of serial liars," unquote. I love it, man. Now a word from our sponsor and then on to this interview. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. Something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Mark Carter. Mark is a Canadian, a musician and creative, and a fellow truther who has deeply investigated all sorts of things that they really don't want you to know about. Here is my interview with Mark Carter. All right, I am here with Mark Carter, Canadian truther and musician. Mark Carter, Mark, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much, Tony. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you know, we had this kind of rant. We were at a Saint Germain holiday party up in Vancouver, BC, and we sat next to each other at breakfast and got this great conversation going. And so I really wanted to get you on early on in season 8 of Base Camp for Men, and thankfully you were game. And I love talking to truthers, and I love talking to people that have been down a bunch of rabbit holes and hearing their perspective on a whole host of things that we're going to get into. But before we really start that, maybe just give the listeners a brief background so they know who you are, like where you grew up, where you live now, maybe what sorts of things you do for your creative life or work, anything that might be relevant to today's conversation.
Sure. I grew up in Montreal, which is in the mainly French-speaking province of Quebec in Canada. So Canada's second largest city. And I studied music there. So I was always musically inclined since I was very small. So I got really passionate about that and started singing, playing quite a bit around town, and did some official music studies too. And I also studied in French, so my French got really good at a certain point.
Mm.
Eventually, I kind of gotten what I needed out of Montreal and was feeling a need for a change. So I moved out to Vancouver on the West Coast and have been loving it here. And I've been to the United States of America a lot of times. Really enjoy the energy there and the people. Very fond of that. Hoping for more political harmony between our two nations.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully very soon. I think it can all be resolved because we're natural neighbors and good friends.
Absolutely.
And that's just the way it should be. You know, we have a lot of the same challenges and a lot of the same values. So, you know, we need to get back to a harmonious relationship. Very important for America and the Americas.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. You know, you and I are both longtime truthers that we found out as I started talking to you at brunch up in BC. And we both kind of zeroed in on 9/11 as one of the big things that helped us move our understanding forward. And in particular, Building 7, I've been over my own kind of 9/11 awakening. I'll weigh in a little bit, but I wanted to hear about how it was for you. And because a lot of people, 9/11 was this kind of bellwether moment where it seemed like the global masses maybe took a big step forward in understanding what was behind the curtain a little bit as they went down rabbit holes about Building 7 or the Pentagon, like whatever they were clicking on to try to understand or the conversations they were having. I feel like 9/11 probably, I don't know if intentionally or not, but it definitely moved consciousness into a different area of understanding what kind of system we live in. So how was it for you? How did 9/11 unfold? What was going on that had you maybe go, what is, you know, I want to investigate this because I don't, the official story isn't making a lot of sense.
Yeah. Around the time, funnily enough, I was doing quite a bit of traveling between Montreal and New York City and also Montreal and Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of interesting synchronicities kind of in my own personal journey. I was actually in New York City for New Year's Eve in 2001 visiting a friend in Brooklyn. And, you know, we went to the Twin Towers. I got a really creepy feeling being kind of in the stores level, the commercial level.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the opportunity to go to the top of the tower. And because of kind of, I guess, the bombing in 2003, I just felt I physically felt a sense of trepidation about that. So instead, I went to the top of the Empire State Building, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I had a bit of a premonition. But anyway, there was kind of an uneasy feeling.
Mm.
And for September 11th itself, I had just flown back the previous day from Vancouver to Montreal. And I was supposed to go in for work. And then I called in for work and they said, "Have you heard the news?" And I hadn't. So that was kind of what happened there. So, you know, I'm glad I got to land in time before all the airline craziness. But the story I accepted at the time was basically it was blowback from some kind of radical Muslim sects for a lot of U.S. military interference in the Middle East. So mm-hmm. that was one of the alternative narratives, and it seemed really plausible to me. So I kind of sat on that for about 5 years or whatnot. And at one point I was walking by a bus shelter in Vancouver. And there was a sticker about Building 7. I'm like, what's this? So I looked online and hadn't heard about that at all. It took me about 5 minutes to realize that the building had been rigged for demolition. And it took me not much longer to realize that, therefore, the Twin Towers had been rigged for demolition as well.
Yeah.
So that really started my journey. I had been, I guess, a little bit primed for that because I'd been a Kennedy assassination buff for a long time.
Mm.
So I knew a little bit of what to look for, but like you see, I don't like the term rabbit hole. That's kind of a loaded term. There's some subtext to that in terms of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And also, I think the Epstein Network would have a little bit of a different interpretation of what rabbit hole stands for them.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah.
And also, there was some people call it predictive programming in terms of some movies at the time, notably The Matrix. And what was that one with... trying to remember.
Matrix is the famous one. Yeah. There's another one. There's another one with a rabbit hole in it. A rabbit as a symbolism.
I was thinking of the movie with Brad Pitt and and he has his doppelganger.
Is it Seven or is it one of those?
No.
Billy Button or whatever. I'm getting like three Brad Pitt movies mixed up together.
Yeah, I know.
It's all right.
When we're with Edward Norton and Brad Pitt.
Oh, that's Fight Club.
Yeah, Fight Club. Exactly. Yeah, that's definitely, there's all sorts of deep programming in that as well. So it's kind of a counterpart to the Matrix. And some of the criminal networks who had a lot of control with the media, they were seeding the public mind in terms of the kind of conspiracy mindset beforehand. So it was a very complex operation, obviously multi-level.
Yeah. Yeah. I just remember I was living in New York City when the towers were hit and blown up, but I just remember going, what about Tower 7? Like, I was just like, that is like a 45 story building. It's like at the time I was like, the planes dropped the twin towers by themselves without demolition, without any kind of explosive wired to the building. I was buying that. The two things I didn't buy, I was like, when I was asking my friends, how did Tower 7 fall? And they're like, I don't know, you know, planes hit those two other buildings. I'm like, but that doesn't explain why Tower 7 just fell over, like just imploded like a demolition straight down onto itself. There's no plane hit that building. So what happened to that? And that's not that close to Tower 1 and 2. That's like over there, you know, I can't remember the streets names, but I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And when I asked architects, and I knew a number of them, they were like, I don't know how that, there's no way that thing just falls over because of an office fire. So people were kind of like, that doesn't make sense, but they weren't really digging the way like Richard Gage and stuff started to dig into it. And the other thing that I could never get an answer for was that film footage of the plane hitting the Pentagon. And then when I would ask people, they were like, yeah, there's no cameras. There was no cameras on it. I'm like, the Pentagon has cameras in every, like, there is nothing around DC that's not on camera, you know? And this was even back then, there was cameras in every square inch of New York City. Like you couldn't hide from the cameras at that time even. And I'm like, it doesn't add up. Like where is the, you know, and I think they ended up producing something that kind of looked like an airplane, but you could see that it was a shabby job and it looked like it could easily be produced, you know, in a studio to make it look like the plane was going in. But there was eyewitnesses. None of the eyewitnesses said they saw a plane, and there was people who were on the ground level. They were like, I never saw anything. So there was a bunch. I mean, those were the two biggest ones for me. I don't know if you want to add anything to either one of those.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Through a lot of research and speaking with professionals and some ex-military people from the U.S. as well, it's like it became obvious from the footage that, you know, the Twin Towers was an explosive demolition, whereas Building 7 was an implosive demolition, much more of a standard sort of one.
Yeah.
And some of the researchers I got involved with were focusing, first of all, on the insurance frauds of 9/11, which is massive. So if you look at it as a criminal event and a financial terrorism event, it starts to make a lot more sense as to what happened, and also kind of a military event based on all of the adventures that the unfortunate U.S. military was sent on in the Middle East, which is kind of a British imperial term, you know, West Asia.
Yeah.
You
know, we had talked about David Icke. David Icke was pretty instrumental in my early days when I was reading him. And, you know, some of his stuff was just like jarring. You know what I mean? Like, guys are like, what are you, a reptile? You know, like just my young mind was like, this dude's crazy, you know? But there was so much truth in his large books that I was like, I was getting a lot out of it. Even when I was setting aside some of the extraterrestrial stuff or the hybrids, I was like, well, I don't know about that. Let me just set that aside. I was, you know, agile enough to kind of go, I'm not sure but like his power, his pyramid of power, global power, and the families and how it intersected with all of the different three-letter agencies was brilliant. It kind of filled in something really solid in my mind, so I could see, oh, the World Health Organization and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral. I could see all of a sudden, oh my God, of course, you know, I can see how they make all these different decisions and put things in motion because of all these different intersecting boards and think tanks and stuff like that. And he had mentioned, you know, how basically the world is run by dark magic, and that, and I was like, you know, there's some, I could, that resonates with the truth for me as well. And I think we're seeing it in spades right now with all the satanic imagery that we see in commercials and advertising and the music industry, the film industry. It's full of really disturbing images that they used to kind of hide is subliminal stuff. To your point earlier, in things like The Matrix and Fight Club, they're just pushing at us. You know, wait till tomorrow's halftime show. I that's going to be a satanic something. I guarantee it. And that, you know, David, I kind of said Judaism is really a black magic blood cult. And it's not, you can't even say that without somebody or a bot jumping down your throat saying you don't like Jewish people or you're an anti-Semite, but it's so convoluted that it's not to say that all Jewish people worship Lucifer or Satan or into blood sacrifices. That's not what I'm saying. And I'm not saying that all Zionists are Jews. They're not. But there is, to not mention it as a linchpin of what's going on, and the dark magic part, I think, comes from that Khazarian lineage where they did have priests and priestesses worshiping, you know, and now it's turned into, I know I'm giving you a lot, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it, because I think on the first time I came across it, I said I could sense some truth, but I was also like, I can't talk about this stuff. This is going to get me lynched in New York City where I lived for 10 years, right? But I think there's distinctions, there's little subtle distinctions with these terms: black magic, Judaism, blood cult, globalist elites, right? There's little distinctions and subtleties that fills in the picture where you're not so worried about what people call you. You're just saying, well, wait a minute. No, I'm not saying I don't like Jewish people. That's not what I'm saying. I have friends that are Jews, yeah. Right? That's not it at all. And I have a deep appreciation. I spent 10 years in New York City, many, many friends and clients and stuff. So it's just, it's a little bit the elephant in the room. And if you don't call it out in a skillful way, then it just lives in the shadow. And that's where it's doing a lot of its, that's where it's doing a lot of its kind of damage.
Pretty much. And David Icke was, I always found him a great synthesist. So he drew on a whole bunch of different sources. Mm-hmm. One of the most, I think, credible ones or authoritative was the fellow who wrote The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, which later on was kind of cribbed on by G. Edward Griffin, who wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island. But that was massively based on The Secrets of the Federal Reserve by...
Yeah.
Chaotic American Virginian named Eustace Mullins, who was an amazing American patriot and wrote lots of deep books on, for instance, the Jewish question and a lot of hidden American history and the British Empire and the networks of that. So, that official research goes really deep. And I found Gilad Atzmon, the ex-Israeli dissident who's a leading saxophonist, kind of jazz musician in Britain. I learned a lot from him as well about the kind of complexities of Jewish culture. And he talks about Jewishness and Judaism, the religious aspect, you know, the cultural aspect. So it gets complicated.
Who's the name of the saxophonist again?
Gilad, so G-I-L-A-D, and then A-T-Z-M-O-N. Or A-T-Z-M-O-N, I guess, in the States. Yeah. A lot of the Judaic cabal went after him, basically, because he was speaking out on a lot of his experience and what he knew and what he learned. And he's a very scholarly fellow, very outspoken. So a courageous man. And yeah, so he's not quite as active, unfortunately, on the internet as he used to be, because there was a big backlash against him from, you know, officialdom, the Rothschild networks and so on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you, you know, I spent, it was interesting that you're what you're going through is kind of like, is a similar thing. You said, yeah, I'm kind of starting to step away from some of the conspiracy stuff. I'm not, I want to get back into my creativity. I'm feeling the same way. I'm feeling like I've learned what there isn't really, I'm not saying it in an egotistical or arrogant way where I'm saying, you know, I know everything is going, like, there's still some things that could probably take, not shock me, but be like, oh, I don't know. I see that on the bingo card kind of thing. But I've been down so many kinds of these investigations, and I don't feel the need to really do it anymore. I don't know if that's going to disappoint my listeners, because I've been, like, you know, talking about this stuff. I'm just kind of like, I'm all good. And like, a lot of the stuff that's hitting the shores of consensus consciousness right now is the Epstein stuff. And what's the Epstein stuff? It's going to be blackmail and child trafficking, Mossad, and all the celebrities that are compromised, and just really disturbing stuff around ritual sacrifice. But I've already, you know, I know you did too. I came across that stuff a long, long time ago. And was talking about it a long time ago. I don't feel the need to add another. People are going to be popping and going, holy cow, I had no idea the conspiracy theorists were on the right button there. I thought they were crazy, like I thought David Icke was crazy when I was young. And so, but I don't feel the need to add to it unless asked. I don't feel, I want to step away and kind of be focused on spiritual higher vibration stuff, including art and creating art and appreciating music and all those different things. I feel more called to that. I don't know. You had mentioned something that I just want to get your take on it. And maybe a little bit like, what's the dark side of being a somebody that's investigated these topics for, you know, two decades or more? You know, how are you arriving? Is it fatigue? Is it like, I just don't need to do it because I already understand a lot of that stuff? Like, what's your mindset? And then what's your path right now for that?
Yeah, I went through that, and I went through kind of an emotional mourning period as I kind of shed, you know, quite a number more illusions I'd had about the way the world works, and just realized a lot of the darkness of some of these kind of organized crime and ritual kind of dark cult entities. And at a certain point, we want to really focus on solutions, you know, kind of once we've identified a lot of the problems, as they say, where attention goes, energy flows. After one has developed more of an accurate picture of the earthly playing field, a lot of the dark forces, I think, they really want to fight. They want people struggling with some sort of octopus or whatever, and just but that ultimately is kind of a waste of time. You know, it's like I want to step away from that and focus on, as much as possible, where do we go from here? You know, we can't keep battling all sorts of legacy systems. You know, they're kind of, some of them are crumbling under their own weight. Some people are battling with them to help take them down. At the same time, you need a whole group of new creators, you know, people who are grounded in reality and are also calling in a lot of light, both to illumine those shadow networks, but also to bring in a lot of what mankind needs at the moment in terms of moving forward and calling in for like a rejuvenation, a renaissance of the culture, because our culture is being damaged through a lot of infiltration and corruption. And I've been finding that a lot of the basic Christian concepts are pretty much on point in terms of the spiritual battle between good and evil and between godly forces and demonic forces. So just through a whole bunch of different levels, I've discovered a lot of accuracy there. So
yeah, big time. Yeah, they've really done a job on demoralizing people. I mean, I live in a big American city in Seattle, and The city's nothing. We've always had drugs in Seattle. We're a port city like Vancouver, so we've always had our fair share of substances because it comes in and it's right there at the port. But it was always such a beautiful, like, kind of edgy, grungy. It was artistic. It was creative. It was a city that people were happy to live in. And, you know, it was affordable and all these different things. And now it's, you know, you could just see the culture. It's just like, we just have a lot of drug addiction, a lot of mental illness between narcotics and pharmaceuticals. Just a lot of people are not, they're not their best version of themselves, let's say. And I can just see it's heartbreaking to me because I can see the toll it's taken on my tribe. My tribe is not white. My tribe is not American. My tribe is humanity. And I can see that it's just had this devastating effect on us. And that's, you know, that's by design. And I love what you're saying about, you know, we got to start creating the new golden age. And it sounds a little funny on that, but the old system that we were trapped inside of is crumbling. The centralized control, I believe, is teetering. I don't think it's going to hold the new vibration. It won't stand up to the new vibration. I think if we create the higher vibration and start creating structures from the decentralized higher vibration, then we have the solution. I think that's part of it, is we've gotten so used to having them decide how we're going to live. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to refer to that famous Friedrich Nietzsche quote, he who fights with monsters should look to it that he himself does not become a monster. And if you gaze long into an abyss, the abyss also gazes into you.
Yeah, so that's good. I love
caution
it.
For folks about not wading too deeply into the darkness, but just enough to kind of illumine the map enough to kind of see basically what's going on and then kind of readjust. I've been focused on monetary reform for a long time because a big part of the whole old, let's call it the East India Company, Bank of England, Rothschild system has focused on controlling the money supply.
Yep.
By private banks extorting governments into giving them a monopoly over currency issuance.
Yeah.
And then charging interest on that for the privilege of basically printing up money at basically close to no cost. Whereas the state money, governments can issue national currencies with basically no interest or a small internal debt, basically. And that's a much healthier model. And now, of course, we have the cryptocurrency revolution as well, which offers a lot of possibilities. I mean, I think some of that is being co-opted, whereas some of it is some really intelligent and creative and technologically brilliant people who are looking to maximize personal freedom and freedom among the networks of people they want to associate with. So rather than having extorted commerce, we have voluntary contracts and trade, which makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and just to your point earlier, you know, if a nation said no to the Rothschild central banks, they just assassinated you and installed their own person, like Gaddafi in Libya, right? It's just like he stood up to them, said, "No, I'm going to make an African, you know, banking, you know, where it's decentralized. It's going to be us, not you controlling." Well, that, you know, he didn't live through that. So they have a lot of ways of dealing with you if you don't want to play ball. Like you said, it's a criminal enterprise. You know, AI is on everybody's, you know, everybody's talking AI, and you know, we've been programmed by Hollywood movies that AI is going to become sentient, take over. It's, you know, Terminator, iRobot. I mean, the list is long. You know, is it something to be, you know, I mean, David Icke, again, it's why I'm not really, you know, down. I just can't stand the black pill very much, Mark. Like David Icke, I love David Icke's mind, but he doesn't really present much of a solution. It's a few pages in a book of, you know, 400 pages. And it's basically, you know, how fucked we are because AI is going to, you know, it's transhumanism has gotten rolling already, and AI is going to, you know, take everybody's livelihood and we're just going to live in 15-minute cities dictated by AI. I just can't get down with that. I just feel like it disregards you and I's divinity, our creative problem solving, that, you know, it basically says you guys can't figure it out. AI is going to do everything for you, says we, the technocrats. But I believe, yeah, I believe that AI is really a neutral tool, and that if we, the people, use it in a decentralized way that helps humanity, I think it'll be a really important tool for creating the golden age that we just spoke of. And that, yeah, maybe there's going to be some that are programmed to dominate. That's not surprising. We know that our adversary is using it too. That's okay. Just like our adversary uses Bitcoin, doesn't mean Bitcoin's evil or it was, you know, created by Jeffrey Epstein, whatever ridiculous things they're saying. It's a neutral tool. It can be used by anybody. So the globalists will keep using it to try to control things. And we, the people, have an opportunity to create using first principles of freedom and how it works for all of us. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on AI. You know, do you use it at all, or is it something that you just leave on the sidelines? I'm dabbling, but I can't say I'm really doing that much with it, because I just like doing things the old way. But anyways.
Yeah, pretty much I'm the same. I don't use it. I prefer to keep my mind sharp and just again active and kind of figure it out on my own using logical and intuitive faculties. So I think it's good to exercise those as much as possible. I don't believe in a lot of I find there's a lot of mythology to do with AI. You know, machines are never going to become sentient.
Yeah.
A lot of that was seeded, I think, in the movie 2001 by Stanley Kubrick there with HAL, which is an acronym for IBM there.
Is that where it started? Was that the first time Hollywood kind of put that idea in everybody's head?
That was one of the main ones, I'd say. Star Trek, I think, was very, a lot of predictive programming in that as well. But the genesis I can see goes back to H.G. Wells, the British author of, like, for instance, The War of the Worlds. And this was back in the late 1800s. So it goes back a really, really long time. And I also find there's been a lot of UFO alien claims that are pretty preposterous in most cases. A lot of it comes out of the H.G. Wells science fiction continuum there. And there's just been so much fakery throughout the 20th century. And one of the main guys who kind of focuses on that in his work is Miles Mathis, who does a lot of kind of alternative history. And he documents a lot of fake events. You know, some of his papers, such as the ones on Charles Manson and the one on John Lennon, I find brilliant. I don't agree with his take on the JFK assassination at all. So it's good to kind of approach his work carefully. And he also has a really detailed science site as well. But he's definitely a brilliant independent investigator. And for folks who haven't encountered his work as well, that's a really deep dive.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know his work. Yeah, I think like also like the one of the earlier ones too was the novels of Philip Dick. You know, he was really on the edge of, you know, robots, transhumanism, intelligent AI. He was channeling stuff as well. You know, we met at Saint Germain at a Saint Germain holiday party. I love going to that. I go as regularly as the Saint Germain regulars. It's got a small group of really dedicated practitioners, and they're just lovely people, high vibe. You know, what do you like about the Saint Germain work? Because it's pretty esoteric. I don't think a lot of people know about it. You know, you have in both of our countries, we have a lot of Christians, probably a lot of Catholics and Protestants, and then the other religions as well. Saint Germain is more esoteric, I would say. But I'll let you answer it before I weigh in. Just like what is it that attracted you to the ceremony and the work? And you know, are you a regular practitioner, meaning you go almost like church where you go once a week, or you know, how is it part of your lifestyle or your spiritual practice?
In retrospect, I'm surprised I didn't come across the material a lot earlier than I did. I discovered it after I moved to Vancouver, and I'd been on quite a spiritual journey for a long time, kind of starting via some of, I guess, George Harrison of the Beatles' kind of interest in Eastern religions. And yeah, I got interested in a lot of the New Age and spiritualism. I went to Unity in Montreal for a while as well, which is kind of a an offshoot of Christianity, pretty much. So it's been quite a journey for me. And then what drew me to a lot of the Saint Germain material, or the I Am Ascended Master books, which goes back to the 1930s, is there's a this tremendous inner consistency within the material. And there's a whole bunch of concepts, and it's just, it makes a lot, it just makes a lot of sense to me. And I read lots about it, lots of the material. And I found it had a lot of the ring of truth to it for in a lot of ways, which in terms of a lot of more, I guess, traditional or dogmatic kind of Christian groups, I found that I always sensed a lot of distortion among what was being presented to me. I found that there was a strong core of truth, particularly to do with Jesus and connecting with Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit. I had a problem with, and I still have a problem with a lot of the Old Testament and the claims there as well. I find a lot of it is kind of the inverse of the New Testament. Yeah. It's kind of presented as a continuation, or they're kind of stitched together into this supposedly Judeo-Christian religion. But I think more and more people are realizing there's really no such thing. You know, Judaism is one thing, and that segment really dug in their heels after Jesus. And modern Judaism is based on the Talmud much more so than the Tanakh or the Old Testament.
Yeah.
So what I learned about a lot about that after in the course of 9/11 research. So yeah, if that helps answer, if there's a follow-up question, that's fine.
Is the Talmud really, like, I've seen people say what's in the Talmud, but they'll do it in a really kind of clickbaity way, that the Talmud is, it's got all this really, like, how, you know, it's okay to have sex with little kids and stuff like that. You know, basically saying it's giving the thumbs up to abusing the goyim, the Gentiles, and kids. And I never knew if it was just being said. You know what I mean? Like, I had no source. I don't read Hebrew. You know, I was like, maybe it says that, maybe not. You know, I don't really know. But I always kind of like, you know, I wonder if they're digesting stuff that's, you know, I mean, I knew Jewish rabbis in New York City, and I'm like, do they really think that? Is that part of their belief system? Because I would find that to be incongruent with the man that I know as a Jewish rabbi.
Yeah, well, I think in the modern world, the proof is in the pudding, and there's a whole bunch of just videos online with various rabbis talking about their beliefs that have gotten just millions of views in some cases on YouTube and other platforms. So as far as I'm concerned, the cat is out of the bag. It's pretty much being revealed what's really going on behind the curtain. I knew in Montreal, I knew almost nothing about Judaism. You know, I had a lot of friends who came from a cultural Jewish background. I guess some of their families went to synagogue. Other ones were, you know, not into Judaism. They're more kind of just within the so-called Jewish community. So there's really a series of concentric circles there. There's a black magic cult at the core, I believe, of, you know, particularly the Sabbatean Frankist offshoot of Judaism, which is kind of what the Rothschilds are all about.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch of different outliers, basically. There are all sorts of systems that crime cabal, or say mafia, attempts to control, whether it's the monetary system, the military systems, the communication systems, and on and on.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who grow up within a Jewish context who are unaware of a lot of what's going on. Some of them have some rumblings just through the community as to kind of what's going on. Some of them turn a blind eye to a lot of corruption that's going on, and insider trading and that sort of thing, whereas other people within the community are outspoken about that sort of thing. So it's really, as you might expect, it's a very mixed sort of thing. And, you know, the people who are using the Jewish community as a front for a lot of their criminal activities as Judaic supremacists, who are attempting to take over as many systems as possible and to basically act as, I think, a vehicle for, you know, demonic forces. which is what Eustace Mullins writes about as well, and who behave in a parasitic sort of way through the monetary system, through a lot of infiltration and subversion of our society, such as the Russian dissident Yuri Bezmenov talks about in terms of demoralizing society that you mentioned. I think that's what's going on, basically. So a lot of it is about dark forces not being able to stand the disinfecting energy of sunlight.
Yeah.
So I find godly people have a responsibility, and it's a pleasure for us, really, to call God its light in and to shine as much as possible unto areas that really need it, so that we can all heal as mankind and help accelerate the demise of legacy systems that have just been harmful to ourselves and the planet, and promote the replacement of godly systems that spread a lot more joy and harmony throughout the planet.
Amen, brother. Yeah, yeah. You know, I've been finding myself listening to a lot more classical music and a lot more like Japanese classical music. I just feel like there's something about that beautiful music that just uplifts my soul and just really helping me right now. It's weird. It's like, I've always liked classical music. I just was a rock and roll guy, or, you know, I like jazz and all that when I'm making art or creating or whatever. But I've really been gravitating towards this kind of uplifting, high vibe, high skill, you know. And I was listening to this Japanese pianist. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Hiroyuki Hoshimoto or something like that. Does that ring a bell to you at all?
I haven't heard of him.
Okay. But I mean, I was listening to him going, there's no way AI could ever make anything this beautiful, right? There is, and I find listening to that kind of music, it strengthens me, and it reinforces my faith in God, the divine, and our place in the universe, because I sense like that's where our power is. We have immense creative abilities, and we have inborn divinity as part of the Godhead, if you will. And it just reassures me that forget the black pillars. We've got so many powerful tools at our disposal to create and to make peace and to create the next higher vibrational platforms. You know, and I wanted to ask you really we touched on music. Let me ask you about that. Like, how do you use music as your part of your spiritual life? Before we get into asking about recommendations, and there's one in particular I wanted to ask you about. So, but let's talk, since I opened up music, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, music has always had a magical and spiritual dimension for me. I'd been mesmerized since I was a small child. I used to memorize all sorts of songs, just listening Beatles songs, Paul Simon songs, that sort of thing, when I was very, very young. So a lot of them I just know like the back of my hand. And the spiritual element, I mean, I got really into rock and roll too. Discovered just a lot of very talented artists. I didn't realize a lot of the extent of the how a lot of it was kind of, there was an intelligence operation behind a lot of it. A lot of it goes, they called it the British invasion. So a large part of it was a targeting by the old British Empire continuum of American Christianity and traditional Christian values to kind of infiltrate the churches, kind of like they did beforehand with a Scofield Bible, which had all these seeds of kind of modern Zionism to confuse American Christian churches. Mm-hmm. One of the main fellows writing about that, I guess, was Dave McGowan in his Laurel Canyon book about the music industry and how a lot of the big stars of the 60s were the children of military intelligence families, Jim Morrison being one of the main ones, but a whole bunch of others. So it's fascinating material.
I didn't know that.
Miles Mathis. Yeah, yeah. And so his Jim Morrison's dad was an admiral during the Gulf of Tonkin incident,
which my God.
Trigger event for the Vietnam War.
Oh my God, no way. Another strand, so
So that's extremely extensive among a lot of the 60s kind of hippie stars and the peace and love. A lot of it was done to divert the anti-war movement into kind of They used the Manson stage play because a lot of that was faked, and kind of like a shock horror movie. So a lot of what was claimed in that was basically staged by Hollywood, and a lot of the people involved in that were actors. So if you look at some of the old footage in terms of some of this, apparently the Manson family going for their, you know, show trials and all that sort of thing, it's just sheer Hollywood, like a lot of manufactured events nowadays.
Yeah.
So the Manson thing was really a pivotal event in terms of kind of media subversion in the United States in 1969. Along with a lot of other stuff, like the fake moon landing, basically, how certain groups stole the money and basically faked that when I think they realized that they didn't have the technology to physically accomplish that, probably despite the best wishes and efforts of President Kennedy, who was genuinely wanting to accomplish that on behalf of the United States. But then after his assassination, you know, and Jim Garrison pointed out there was a group called Permindex behind that. And then Michael Collins Piper, in around about 2005 or so, wrote a book called Final Judgment that showed the Israeli hand behind the JFK assassination, which is now pretty mainstream. You know, a lot of people looked into that and confirmed that. But in terms of music, I mean, I've also been kind of, I dropped a lot of illusions based on my ongoing research and my increasing sensitivity as to the kind of vibrations. In some cases, you know, you look at some of the things like grunge, and it's like, what sort of dark energies are people really subjecting themselves to in terms of kind of rage and complaining and you know, extreme sadness? So I've also been kind of just going back to like Handel, a lot of Baroque music, and Thomas Tallis, and a lot of the just beautiful choral music, and Henry Purcell, who's a great English composer from the 1600s. So a lot of that's really beautiful and inspiring. Some of the instrumental New Age music I find really beautiful as well. And I guess a lot of people getting into gospel. So there's been a real revival of a lot of spiritual and religious music that has a real luminous core to it, rather than wallowing in a lot of the shadow emotions, which again is designed to keep people feeling disempowered and demotivated, and that tends to keep people in a zombie state and allow, you know, the banking cabal to kind of run rampant over people's lives and attempt to sabotage their families and the traditional institutions. So, you know, we need to become aware of that, I believe, and start feeding healthier systems. And if the systems are not out there, to build them both on an individual and a group level with folks of like minds, and also to have faith and to put in the inner and the outer work to make sure that we're moving in the right direction, rather than capitulating to a lot of these parasitic and or demonic forces, which have been around on the planet for a long time. Yeah. But which I believe are being eradicated from the planet right now, and in an accelerating way. You look at the extent of the Epstein exposures. I tend to call it the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I know. So
it's discrediting a lot of corrupt groups, and it promises a watershed once we really cross a certain energy threshold. And I think we're getting there sooner rather than later.
I do too. I think everything you said is spot on with that. It's the gift that keeps on giving. That's a funny way of saying it. Yeah, you know, I've gone a complete 180 on the Hollywood thing. Like when I was a kid, and when I say kid, I mean even as a young man in my 20s and 30s, you know, I didn't think anything. I didn't think Hollywood was a propaganda machine. I didn't think there was any messaging. I just thought, you know, I went to the movies. Oh, that was a really good movie. You know, Fight Club was a good movie. And now all I see is all of the attempts to brainwash, propagandize. You know what I mean? Like, I can't unsee it now. I'm like, wow. You know, and it's just the movies have gotten to be terrible too. Like the quality, it seemed like when we were younger, Mark, it was like there was true kind of artists that were wanting to tell stories. Now, whether or not they were compromised or they were slipping in things. So sometimes you watch a classic movie like, oh my God, they were doing that trans thing even back then, you know, or starting to drop it in there. But I just feel like there's not good storytellers, at least not in Hollywood. It's all freaking Marvel and just it's crap. And it's like, I guess it's back to what we said earlier. It's part of demeaning and lowering the bar. So it's just like, people are like, I'm going to see the Avengers part, you know, number six, you know, and I think that's a good movie. And it's just like, it's not, it's crap. It was crap at number one. Yeah, I'm just riffing a little. Just kind of, I'm kind of sad because I lived in New York City for 10 years and I used to go to art house films. So you'd go see Casablanca or you'd go see any number of like classic movies that were just wonderful storytelling and art and cinematography. And I feel like I can't ever do that anymore. I just feel like it's all just, you know, there's five movies out and it's all crap. I bet in Vancouver, maybe you've got more art house or kind of those kind of throwback options for film, but I don't know. I'm just kind of whining about where we're at with the degeneration of art in film in particular.
Yeah. I was kind of a film buff. I used to go to the art cinemas in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Also, and there's one called the Pacific Cinematheque in Vancouver as well that shows a lot of those. So I got really into a lot of the Fellini, Antonioni, so a lot of these Italian directors of the 1960s in particular, and you know, some of the French directors. So I've been into European art films, and they're, like you say, there was more beauty in the films, better storytelling. I haven't gone to a movie in many, many years, so I'm mm-hmm. kind of out of the loop in terms of that. I hear about it secondhand from other people as to the kind of degradation and all the, you know, and all the woke programming in terms of movies and TVs nowadays. Speaking more to music, which is more my focus, after about 9/11, there's a really serious degradation, I find, in the quality of popular music. You know, there's all sorts of great stuff from the 60s through the 90s. And then, unfortunately, after the year 2000, I find a lot of it took a nosedive. There was a lot of kind of darker energies, a lot of dumbing down, a lot of just mindless repetition. And I just don't relate to most of modern music, contemporary music anymore. So that's a big part of why I feel we're really overdue for a renaissance. And probably the 2030s are going to bring that, is kind of my feeling. A lot of people have been kind of drawing a parallel to the Weimar Republic in Germany back in like the late 1920s, in terms of there's a lot of banker degradation of German society. There were all sorts of unfair reparations put on the nation after the First World War. Mm-hmm. And a big goal of all that was to create, you know, what they call now the State of Israel. So there was some opportunistic banking and dark black magic cult programs, setting up all sorts of nations to war against one another. People know about the Balfour Declaration, which got the United States to come to, you know, Great Britain's rescue. There was all sorts of planning behind the scenes, but Germany went through a lot of cultural sabotage back in the 1920s, and the kind of there's some parallels certainly with the modern American society, and we need to be really careful in North America what paths we choose, and just to keep our eyes open and make sure we're checking behind the curtain as to what's really going on, and not being misled by a lot of Pied Pipers and false prophets. But that's where a lot of the inner work comes in, to make sure that we have our intuitive and logical faculties intact, and we're constantly checking ourselves and our assumptions, and teaming up with people we trust, and helping to create better systems so that we can all thrive.
That's great. I love it, Mark. We got to wrap up. If you were to point somebody that maybe has not been down some of the investigative places, I was going to say rabbit holes, I shorthand things that way sometimes, but where would you point them if they were like getting curious about this stuff, or where, you know, is there a website or a couple of books maybe that's like, you feel like this would be a great place if somebody's, wanting not something super specific like the Kennedy assassination, but maybe something that's like got enough in it. You know, I know Ike, people have read Ike. I don't recommend that for a newbie going in. I just think it's a little bit too, you know, I have my recommendations, but I wanted to ask you, I saw you had Anna von Reitz in there. That would be another whole episode with you and I think. But anyways, I wanted to ask you where you would point listeners if they're looking to get, I don't want to say confirmation, but looking for their own discernment and looking to get a little bit more in the know, let's say.
Yeah, Anna von Reitz up in Alaska has done great work about exposing the deep background of the U.S. corporate overlay over the original American Republic. So, and I've gotten a lot out of her work over the years. I don't necessarily agree with or believe all of her claims, but there's a tremendous amount there, so it's definitely worth looking into. Mm-hmm. Christopher Bolin is the definitive guy on 9/11, so BOLLYN.com. He's written books and has a great website and a lot of talks about 9/11. So he's been on that for a long time, and by a lot of serious investigators, he's considered pretty much the definitive source. Mm-hmm. State of the Nation is a really great news aggregator website in terms of alternative media. It's quite overwhelming sometimes, so it's one can find all sorts of different strands, and they're working hard to preserve and kind of clear up the Republic so that we can maintain freedom and keep a lot of these subversive forces at bay, basically. So mm-hmm. I think they'd be doing a great job for a while. Aim for Truth as well, AIM for TRUTH. Some really great patriots there. A lot of this is to do with some Americans who are pointing out the deep tentacles of the British Empire continuum, I like to call it, and how that relates to the modern Israeli state, which is, some people call it just an offshoot of the City of London, which is called the Vatican and the Commercial Empire. It's not under British law, the square mile of, within the inner city of London. So that's a really interesting area to look into. Apart from that, Brendan O'Connell, the Australian dissident, who's written a lot about Israeli technological infiltration and sabotage of a whole bunch of communication systems, particularly in the computer industry. It's a program called Talpiot, T-A-L-P-I-O-T. So he's done a lot of work investigating and blowing the whistle on that. So I think he's definitely worth listening to. He's a little bit hot-headed sometimes. He gets very passionate. But he's definitely got some good points there, good research. And on the spiritual front, I've been impressed by a lot of what Lori Ladd has been doing. So she has a good YouTube site, L-O-R-I-E and then L-A-D-D. And you know, she does some good talks and meditations. She's gone through a whole process, though I largely identify with, and I'd be impressed by a lot of her work and the light of God that she's aiming to just help manifest more and more on the planet, because Lord knows we need it.
Yep, love it, Mark. I so appreciate you coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your insight, your wisdom. I feel like we could sit around the campfire and talk for hours. I'd love to have you back on, because I think we opened up some other things that are worth chatting about. But once we hit an hour, I got to jump off. So thank you so much for making time today. It was just an absolute pleasure to talk to you, dialogue. I love your perspective. I love how much work you've done to understand what kind of system we live in, and that you're positive, optimistic. It just means a lot. So God bless you. Let's keep in touch. And thanks again for your time today.
Well, thank you very much, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity, and I wish great health and wealth and spiritual expansion and satisfaction and peace and harmony to all of your listeners, whoever they might be, because at the end of the day, we're all in this together. We're on the same planet. We breathe the same air, and we have a lot of common challenges, but we also have a lot of common solutions that are there for the activating. And the more we become aware of that, the faster we can get through this and help really manifest our potential, I think.
Oh, and do you want to give your website, or I mean your email, in case somebody wants to reach out with a question to you?
Sure. Folks with comments or questions are welcome to email me at markstarcarter@mail.com. So that's MarkStarCarter. And just mail.com, not Gmail. It's mail.com. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there we go.
Perfect. Thanks, Mark. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. What a pleasant surprise to meet Mark on our trip to BC recently. I think for those of us that have done our fair share of investigating difficult topics and often being ostracized or even ridiculed for it, whenever we meet a fellow traveler, it is restorative to hear how the journey is going and what God is asking of us now. Mark was kind enough to include links for a lot of the things that we were talking about, and you can find those at the bottom of the episode page on www.basecampformen.com. Next week is a Firestarter episode with just yours truly, and I'll be writing and recording at my new studio over in Lake Chelan. Thank you, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.